What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we welcome you into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in live here on a Tuesday. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Hollywood Munson with you for the next 4 hours as we begin to inch closer and closer to another football weekend for your Tennessee Titans. Boys, happy Tuesday. What's going on?
Nothing much. I'm looking at the guy that said, I caught the babies and I'm like, Nelson Aguilar. That thing's gone viral, man. And I think Nelson, he responded via Twitter.
Good for him, by the way.
But it was just, you know, it's the guy, I know he was kind of making light of, but that's Philly fans, man. Even amidst, you know, a situation where you were being a hero. You know, you're saving lives, kissing babies.
Gotta take a shot.
And then at the end, you take a shot at your local team.
And now you get to go to the game.
Exactly. Only Philly would do that, man. No other team.
Yeah, right there's the tweet on the screen from Aguilar now. Thanking the hero for the community. Twitter, help me out. Let me get in touch with him so we can invite him and his family to
a
game.
That is how, look, Philly, bringing people together. That's Philly, man. Listen, I think it's great that Nelson did what he did. He's like,
I'm Aguilar, I don't know that I could do that.
Yeah, but he, look how good.
He's the better man, is what I'm saying.
But look at the PR, though. Again, just think about it through a PR standpoint. Like, you win. You win big. Like, I have more respect for Nelson Aguilar now.
But if you're the guy, do you keep the same energy when you actually meet Nelson Aguilar? Do you keep that same energy? Do you say, I think you're not that good?
What you have to understand about fans is that if Nelson Aguilar comes back and make two huge catches in this game
and don't
drop a pass, they love him. This is just fans, man. This is how they are. One minute, you might still be one of their good players. You want one of their best players. But if you drop a pass or don't get a sack or throw an interception, they're going to say something about it. And you can still be their best player. That's just how they are.
You know, here's what I do, though. If I was Nelson Aguilar, put on a smile, bring the family to the stadium, hand them the tickets, take pictures, and then I grab the guy to the side and be like, yo, Holmes, you ever do that again to be on national TV? Just saying.
I'm going to give you a Philly special.
Exactly right.
I don't even know what that means.
Exactly. See, he wouldn't know what it means either.
I'm sort of scared for him now.
All right, we got Floyd Reese coming up on today's show, Wes Rucker, Chad Bishop, who covers Vanderbilt, and also Trey Crowder, a comedian and also a Tennessee Vols fan, that will join us coming up at 9 o'clock today.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his work, and certainly he is an antagonist. He likes to stir the pot a little bit and get people riled up. So take it for what it's worth, folks. We like to bring a lot of different perspectives onto the show. But number one, I like a comedian who's a Tennessee fan right now because I'm assuming they have a ton of material over the last 10 years to work with. So we'll talk with him in the final hour. Have a little fun with him. Keep it light. We're not trying to get too serious, so... You know the show. We got some heavy tunes and some light tunes. You know, that's how it goes.
Exactly right. Last night, Monday Night Football, the Bears beat the Redskins 31-15. And I know Titans fans really don't care about Bears against Redskins, but I'm watching that game for about 2.5 quarters before I went to bed, and I'm looking at just everything that is the Chicago Bears, right? And I started comparing them to the Tennessee Titans from the standpoint of they both have a second-year head coach. They both are founded in defense, although the Bears' defense could be an all-time great. Titans' defense, probably a top-five unit, maybe a top-three unit in the league. And then on offense, you know, you compare the Titans and the Bears, And they've got guys at quarterback that are middle of the road that, you know, show flashes, but are also can be game manager-esque at times. No really marquee receivers. You know, they got a little scat back in Cohen. We've got Lewis. They've got Montgomery. We've got Henry. And I'm just wondering, what is it that makes the Chicago Bears last year an 11-12 win team, whatever they were, and one of these teams that many people believe can make a deep run, that separates them from the Titans? Is it simply just Khalil Mack and the greatness of the defense? Because I don't feel like the rosters are that much apart.
I mean, right now, I would say the schedule. I mean, they're atrocious showing on the first night. I mean, their offense was atrocious against the Packers the first night of the season. Listen, I think the Redskins they obviously have their quarterback, so they're not trying to get Tua, you know, like the way the Dolphins maybe are. But the Redskins are going to be one of the five or six worst teams in the league, probably, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, they're 0-3.
So I don't, you know, I think that's you know, when you have one of those defenses going up against Case Keenum, it's such a mismatch. That's why you get all the turnovers and you get everything that's happened. But their offense was atrocious in one game too. It's not like, you know, Trubisky last night was good, but
yeah, they scored 3 points and 16 points the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's not like they were that great. And the defense won them one of those games, and then, you know, the way they played against Green Bay was terrible. So I think Trubisky – what's funny is I was talking to Jonathan Hood, who works in Chicago and covers the team, and it's funny. He used the phrase Trubisky truthers. And I said, "What? Okay, you got to explain that to me." He tweeted it out, and I was like, explain this to me. And he's a radio host in Chicago, works for ESPN Radio nationally on the weekends. And I said, explain this to me. And he goes, you know, it's the field goal kicker's fault. It's the fans' fault. It's the hot dog guy's fault. It's everybody on the world's fault except for Mitchell Trubisky. And I said, that's funny. We have, you know, Mariota birthers in this town where, you know, oh, he was born in Hawaii. He's not an American citizen, so therefore can't play quarterback in the NFL. It's, you know what I mean? Like, there's just these ends of the extreme where in one city, Mitchell Trubisky can do no wrong, even though he hasn't been that great. And in this city, Marcus is awful. He's the worst thing since sliced bread. He's got no chance to be successful. And sure, he's been around longer. He's had more years. They've been to the playoffs equal amount of times, and Marcus has a win. But it's funny how the fan base has turned on Marcus, whereas the fan base will apologize for Trubisky. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that actually means. Does that just mean Bears fans are more committed to their guy? I don't know. I certainly don't think Mitchell Trubisky is better. I think they're about the same. Yeah, they're kind of just average guys. Like, I don't think they're great. I just find the fan base psychologically to be very – that's just interesting, the reactions
that
those fans have.
I think they're both the same fan bases because you say, well, people are on the other extreme about Marcus. Well, not really. There are faceted people that you know, don't like Marcus, and then there's a bunch of people that do, and there are a bunch of people that will say, you know, it's the coordinator's fault, it's, you know, it's the organization's fault, they don't have enough playmakers, yada yada yada, but they never truly point to Marcus and what his in his inability to truly take hold of that quarterback position and make it his and excel the way we think he should excel. So I think you're talking to the same fan bases, but the difference is this, is that even with Mitch Trubisky, this team finished 11-5 with one of the greatest defenses ever, and they've only gotten better this year. Titans, they dealt with a top 10 defense.
Yeah, that's true.
And they because of the defense, kept them in games last year, and they've kept them in games this year. But the offense hadn't held their weight. I think Chicago know who they are. And Nagy is not going to put Mitch Trubisky in a situation where he's not comfortable, where it's going to show his flaws. He's keeping him in his box because he know he has this great defense. I don't think they think that way with Marcus. I think they, and rightfully so, because Marcus is in his fifth year. They want Marcus, they want to give it all, like, Marcus, here, we want you to excel. We don't want you to be in this box. We don't want to restrict you on what you can do. We did that. They did that for you in year one and two. Now in year five, we want to be able to give you this playbook. Second year in this playbook, even though it's a different offensive coordinator, second year in this playbook, we want you to flourish. Chicago, they don't think like that. They know that majority of their games will be won because of what their defense does. And Mitch, just don't mess it up. We're going to put you in a position to use the guys you have on the field. We're not going to tell you, go out there and win a game. And I think the Titans want Marcus to go out there and win a game. And maybe they should do like Chicago. Let's rely on the defense. Let's run the football. And let's just manage the game in hopes that Dean Pease and that really good defense is going to win us more games than not.
Don't you guys think that's what they want to do? I think that's what Vrabel and Pease and Arthur Smith, I think they want it to be a running offense primary first, with Marcus making plays and managing second, and then the defense, you know, being above it all, right? I think there's a similar. I just found it interesting that like the version of us in Chicago, like the guys who do morning drive in Chicago, is a guy who says the media is critical of Mitchell Trubisky. They have critiques of this quarterback, and the fans don't acknowledge any of it. I think that's interesting. Whereas we sort of, you know, the media is probably split half and half on Marcus. Some of us like it, even on this show, like Derek, you're not in. Nick, you're close to being all out. I'm still sort of in on him. We're kind of divided on what we think the future for Marcus holds.
Right.
Whereas, you know, apparently in Chicago, Mitch Trubisky is far more critiqued. Now, again, I think the biggest difference here is the market. I think the Chicago market is full of it's a rabid fan base for over 100 years that loves its product, and the media is no joke in Chicago. I think here there's a huge difference in how we cover the team. We're a little bit more laid back. It's the South. Everything's a little bit slower. The fans are not nearly as passionate about their team as they are in Chicago. There's no question about that.
Oh, sure, sure.
Now, it doesn't mean there aren't Titans fans who love their team. Just on the whole, there are far more rabid Bears fans than there are Titans fans. It's just not even, you know, close. So I just found that dynamic to be interesting because they do have similar – the teams are built in similar ways. And Trubisky stayed healthy, and maybe the play caller for the Bears is better. You know, Nagy's offense is probably a little bit better. They don't have a ton more offensive weaponry than the Titans
do.
No,
I mean, their number one receiver is Allen Robinson. I'll take Corey Davis over this version of Allen Robinson.
Now, is their play caller and their offensive line better? Maybe so. You know, maybe Trubisky hasn't been around a year long enough to start earning that disrespect sort of the way that Marcus has, because when you play long enough, you're going to have bad years. You know, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting observation. And then to see him play well last night, of course, is even more ironic because I had this conversation with the Chicago radio host before the game last night. So.
Hey, John Gruden, how you feel about Mac now?
Yeah, I was just going to say
Gruden
that.
Look at Mac in the Monday night games and just shake his head.
I mean, every time the Bears take the field and Mac wreaks havoc, I just automatically think about how dumb John Gruden is.
Which
and then look at
that?
Amari Cooper at what he's doing in Dallas.
Yeah. Which of the two picks? So that was Josh Jacobs was the pick for Mac, right? He was the last pick in the first round.
I don't know.
Or is it Jonathan Abrams? Either way, the first pick was Cleveland Farrell, which is their own pick, right? Mm-hmm. And then they had Josh Jacobs and Jonathan Abrams. So you traded Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack, and you got Josh Jacobs and Jonathan Abrams. Now, wasn't there another first-round pick the year before that they got for Mack? Didn't they get two first-round picks for Mack?
Hope they did.
So I just am curious. Like, look at what they got. Like, we can almost look at – like, Jonathan Abrams is out for the year, right?
Oh, is he really? I didn't know.
I think he's out for the year. Am I wrong?
Yeah,
he's out for the year. Collarbone or something?
Just unfortunate because he's a good young player.
Yeah, because
he's going to be a good player. He's going to be a good player.
Right, and so if you're Gruden, you're looking at what you got in return, and you're going, okay.
Because Mayock was not involved when that trade happened. I got to think, you know.
I don't think Mayock would have been involved in that trade.
But I know Gruden's calling the shots, but if you're Mayock and you sit down like, you know, last night and you're having a drink with Gruden, you go, you really traded away Khalil Mack?
Am I allowed to say that?
Did you really trade him away?
In his prime. What made me mad about it, the whole thing, was after the first game, he was like, yeah, man, we need a pass rush, man. And I'm just like, you just traded away all your pass rush.
Why?
And the Raiders are in a weird situation, too, because like it wasn't like it was a complete rebuild. They had Derek Carr under contract for a long time. They'd given him the long-time deal. It's not like the Dolphins where they have nothing, right? Like you look at the Dolphins roster and you go, all right, we've got three good players. Let's trade them all for first-round picks. And they've done that. But they weren't Khalil Mack-level players, you know? Like, they didn't have a quarterback. Like the Raiders weren't too far away from being a decent football team if they had just stayed the course, it feels like.
Yeah, Reggie McKenzie did not fall asleep at the combine for you to just trade away Khalil Mack like that. That's not fair for him.
All right, it's Morning Drive. We're live this morning from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. When we come back, Taylor Lewan will not fix what is ailing the Titans, so says Delanie Walker. Back after this on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'm going to be real with you. My position says tight end, right? I can't speak about what other position they're, what they're doing or what they're not doing. This is the NFL, so, I mean, you have to step up. I don't think one guy going to make a difference. I love Taylor to death, and I think he's one of the best tackles in the game, but is that going to make a difference when he come back? I don't think one person can fix the game. It takes all 11 that's out there. So if all 11 is doing their job, then that's what's going to fix it. I would say, I mean, because if we don't, y'all going to make a big deal out of it. So we better change that real fast.
Nice little cleanup there.
Yeah.
Better fix that ish
real
fast. Guess who's
back, not Taylor.
Delanie Walker, Titans tight end, talking yesterday about Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, I mean, and he's right. Because this narrative of, you know, Delanie put it perfectly. Listen, Taylor's one of the best tackles in the National Football League. You know, top 2-3 tackle in the National Football League. And we know what he can be, and we know what he is. But even with that, you ain't changing all the problems that are going on. You're not. You might change the problems at the left tackle position, but you're not changing the problems with the offense. You're not changing the problem with drop balls. You're not changing the problem with the offense scoring consistently. You're not changing third down problems, third and long. You're not changing none of that because these are some of the same problems they had last year with you at left tackle. And I'm not saying that all the problems is Taylor's because they're not. But Delanie was right. You know, if y'all expect us to win as a team, then we lose as a team and we change as a team. One guy. Especially a left tackle. You know, I could see if it was the quarterback getting, yeah, that does make a difference. But a left tackle, no. It's not going to make that much of a difference. So he was right. Taylor coming in ain't going to change what the Titans got going on.
So these two losses to Jacksonville where Mariota was hit and sacked a career high, and then also the close two-point loss to the Colts. So bottom line, you don't think the Titans are 2-1 today with Taylor as opposed to 1-2?
No, because he got beat down last year with Taylor in the backfield. He got hit a lot with Taylor in the backfield. He missed games because he got hit while Taylor was at left tackle. So, again, Taylor is one of the best left tackles in the National Football League. But Taylor has his flaws, too. And he's not going to change the woes of this team. He's not going to change the woes of the offense unless he can throw the ball and run the ball and catch the ball. You know, as Giselle famously said, hey, Tom can't throw the ball and catch it too. You know, what Taylor can't block, run and catch and throw too. He can't do all of that. So as good as Taylor is, he's not solving. They're still 1-2 with Taylor at left tackle.
I don't think that there's a narrative that he solves everything. I don't think that's – I think most fans that have called this show, the three of us, I think most places you hear – and Delanie, you know, explained it well there, like you said, Derek. Like, look, he's great, but he doesn't solve everything. I think everybody kind of views it that way. But it's certainly a huge addition. You can't argue that it's not a huge addition. If you're going to say that he's one of the best tackles in all of football, he's a huge addition, and he makes everybody better. Does it solve all the problems? Absolutely not. But it definitely makes everybody better, hopefully. And what we said on Monday, or Friday, excuse me, even though Jeremy Pruitt says we're not allowed to overreact on Friday, what I said on Friday was the hope, the wish, if you are a Titans fan, the desperate wish, if you're a Titans fan, is that he fixes not just one, but two positions on the offensive line, and then maybe they get marginally better. That they are, instead of the 26th best offensive line, they're the 14th best offensive line. And that's certainly possible. That's very possible. Are they going to be one of the best offensive lines because one guy comes back? Of course not. But are they going to be better? Yes, they should be better. And if Taylor Lewan doesn't make them better, that's a Taylor Lewan problem. Like, if they're not better because the highest paid tackle in the world is back on the field, what are you paying him the money for? Like, at some point, he has to make people better. And he makes the team better. But yeah, I don't think anybody thinks that all of a sudden they're going to go from one of them. He's right now. Marcus is on 15% of his dropbacks is getting sacked. That's number one in the NFL, which means he's under the most pressure of anybody in the NFL. I would assume that would change slightly. But to your point, Derek, I think he was number one in the NFL last year in sack percentage. So that offensive line. Now, they're also out. Palmfield's not starting. Nate Davis is – they're trying to work Nate Davis back into the lineup. It looks like they're trying to rush him to get him ready for this. Apparently, the injury is the concern here, and is he ready to play or not? That's all the stuff that could happen in Week 5 when Taylor Lewan comes back. That could also be a new right guard. So, maybe it's Dennis Kelly. Who knows? How can you take one player and try to improve as much as possible? That's their job right now. Is it going to work? Who knows? Who knows? I don't see them being one of the top 10 offensive lines. I do think they will be far better, though.
So this is the final leg coming up of the 4-game suspension for Taylor Lewan. Obviously, he won't be there for the Falcons game, but when they do get him back, forget the on-the-field, in-between-the-lines play of action and what he does to the left side, what impact he has helping with Roger Saffold. Just from an identity standpoint, an energy, a toughness, is there stuff like the intangibles that Taylor Lewan will bring to this team that they're lacking right now?
I mean,
because he does play with an attitude.
Yeah, Taylor plays with an attitude and an edge. So, do you now get that when he comes? Possibly. It's possible that those guys now play with an edge. It's unfortunate because you got a guy in Roger Saffold who has been paid big money, and a guy that has been, I believe, a Pro Bowl player. He should play with that attitude. And because I never understood this, and I said this last week, it shouldn't take for the left tackle to come back for me all of a sudden to start to play better. It shouldn't. My success, the only time success affects someone is receiver quarterback, I think. That's the only time where success affects someone, where you got the best receiver in the world, but if he doesn't have a quarterback that can get him to him, you won't reap the true benefits of what that receiver can be. Maybe running back too, because you got to have an offensive line in front of you. But everywhere else, it's based on you and you alone. We've seen quarterbacks that do it without marquee play, without marquee receivers. We've seen offensive line do it without a great, line mate next to him. We see cornerbacks do it without another cornerback on the other side or a safety in the back. We've seen edge rushers do it without, having a dominant front on the side of them. So, with that being said, it shouldn't take for Taylor to come back for now all of a sudden Saffold to play up to snuff. If that is indeed the case, then why did y'all sign him anyway?
I'm not saying that in regards to what you said,
but I'm just saying it shouldn't take. We should see that greatness in Saffold regardless. We should say, everybody else but Saffold. Saffold's the guy that's holding his own. He's playing well. And everybody else, but we can't say that about Saffold.
No, but it doesn't mean he doesn't have an easier job. Again, we've got the best producer in Nashville radio, Marquise.
Yes.
Don't tell me he doesn't make the rest of us better because he's here, right? He doesn't put the words in your mouth when you speak, D-Mace, but him being on the team.
Him being on ones and twos.
I know you're trying to sandbag him right now, but him being on the team, anytime you're on a team, whether it's in business or in life, it doesn't matter. If you're surrounded by really talented, good people at what they do, it should make everyone's job easier. That's just sort of a natural thing. And again, I'm with you. It shouldn't take that for Saffold to be good. He needs to be good on his own. But having the best left tackle in football next to you should make your job easier. Just by definition, it should make your job easier. So, again, having the best producer in Nashville sports talk radio, I think makes all of our jobs a little easier.
Yeah.
You hear me, Marquise?
No, I hear you loud and clear.
Come on, dog.
I appreciate it, man. I'm not going to let you, stroke my ego, but I appreciate you.
Nah, you know you loved that.
I did. I ain't gonna lie.
I mean, I disagree with the statement. But.
I mean, personally, you're entitled to your opinion.
Does that make the rewind check?
Yes,
it
definitely
does.
Makes
but no, because I was watching the Redskins game yesterday, and then they kept mentioning Trent Williams. and how him missing kind of affects the offensive line for the, and that's why, you know, Case Keenum is on the ground so much. But yeah. I'm thinking to myself, nah, Case Keenum's on the ground enough because you're facing Khalil Mack and the rest of that defense, and, you know, this offense is just awful. So it's not Trent Williams is not your main concern. Right. It's you have a quarterback problem. Well, you have other problems.
And I think all of these things are true about the Titans. I think all of it's true. Like, they're not going to be automatically great because Taylor comes back. Saffold needs to be paying attention to his own work, but Taylor does make everybody better, and it does make the offensive line better. Like, all of it's true. Now the question is, can the coaching staff, Coach Carter and company, get them together to be playing at a high level to protect the quarterback and run the football so that they can win football games? Like, that, all of this has to come together pretty quickly. Oh, by the way, is it Nate Davis at right guard? Is it Dennis Kelly at right guard? Like, what's going to happen at the right guard position as well? I mean, all this, still, we've got a long way to go to figure it all out.
Speaking of Nate Davis, one man on this station once famously said, you wouldn't know Nate Davis from a jar of Vicks. That was the great Floyd Reese. He joins us coming up next on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive. Welcome back in, 6:32, live here on a Tuesday edition of the show. ESPN 102.5, The Game, as we welcome in our resident general manager, Floyd Reese, co-host of Jared and the GM. Floyd, happy Tuesday. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. You guys?
Doing well. One more game to go until Taylor Lewan returns from his four-game suspension. And we were just playing Delanie Walker's comments from yesterday about how, you know, he loves Taylor Lewan, he respects Taylor Lewan, but he doesn't think Taylor Lewan, as great as he is going to change this thing around. So clearly when he does return, he's an upgrade at left tackle. But what is the trickle-down effect moving in to Roger Saffold, to Ben Jones, and across the board when he does come back?
You know, he will help everything. The part that is going to be unique, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. You know, I wonder how many game reps Saffold and Taylor have had. Because, you know, when Saffold went in with the first group, Taylor generally waited till the second group. And so I'm wondering, you know, how many actual snaps in some kind of game, even a preseason game, have those guys seen together, and whether or not that will be a factor. You know, the bottom line is he will help. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Given that, you know, Kelly has not been bad. You know, the whole problem has been on the right side there. And you know, the struggles that we've had, especially this last week with Campbell lining up there and, you know, him becoming a problem. And what do you do about that? I don't know. Because really, on paper, if you look at it, your best five linemen right now include Kelly. But what do you do with them?
Yeah, you're right. There's not much they can do. Can they bring in a starting new five? Matter of fact, can we swap them for Indianapolis' offensive line? I wish we could.
Work that trade out, can you?
Exactly. how do this team, if they don't get this game, because, I mean, the offense hadn't proven that it can consistently score points. And we saw Atlanta this weekend versus Indy. They started off slow, but they started to pick up steam. And Indy is just good enough that they were able to pull that game out. But if this team can't pick up a victory in Atlanta, what's next for them? Because now they're down 1-3. They're down, you know, a game in a division, two games in the division, matter of fact. And I know it's a long season, Floyd, but what's next for this team? Because even though it's a long season, being down 1-3 and then 0-2 in a division, that's tough.
Yeah, the 0-2 in the division is the thing that really concerns you, because the truth is, if you're going to even have a chance to probably win the division, you're going to have to win the next four division games, which include two against Houston. So that is not going to be easy. Given that, you know as well as I do, during the process of a long season, I mean, you know, can the quarterback in Houston survive all the hits he's taking? Can, you know, Brissett continue to play the way he's playing? I mean, when you watched, and I'm sure we all watched Houston and Indy play this weekend, I mean, the difference was in the teams. I mean, it comes down to, okay, Watson has to make a play right at the end of the game, so he pulls the ball down and scrambles about 5 yards, flips the ball out to the tight end, he goes 50 with it or whatever it was. and they win. And you look at Indy, and you know the quarterback. I think it was fourth down, but anyway, he's got to move around. He's got to get it first. He flips it out to Doyle. It's a 2-yard pass and a 4-yard gain or whatever, but it's first down. Game over. So we've seen those guys make some plays like that we haven't seen Marcus make a lot of. And that's where I look at the two teams and I think, well, that's one of the issues. But the bottom line is, I mean, if you're at Indy and you've got that offensive line and you're the quarterback there, you feel pretty good. Now, Watson at Houston, you know, how does he feel and can he survive? I don't know. But I mean, it's going to be hard. Let's face it. But you got to take them one at a time. And, you know, all the old adages and cliches, I think all fit. You know, you win one and then, okay, that one's gone. What's the next one?
I know fans are very quick to criticize play calling because they think they understand it completely. I know Jared lost his mind when they ran a draw play on 4th-and-2 against the Niners a couple of years ago. He's still probably having conniption fits about it. But if that was the play that they practiced all week against that look, you know, it's hard to fault the play calling. What do you make of Arthur Smith through 3 games? Am I wrong to think that I'm seeing the same stuff every week, that he hasn't truly evolved or adapted? Or what do you make of is that a fair assumption or assessment of the job he's done? Or what do you make of his work so far?
You know, I think he's adjusting. I mean, we saw Kitchens and Cleveland and him talking about, well, I'm getting used to being the play caller and things like that. I'm sure Arthur is going through some of those same things. I mean, it's not an ideal situation for him. You know, his first 4 games, you say, okay, I feel like I really may have some weapons at receiver and the tight end and the running back. And, you know, maybe I can be smart with a quarterback and get him in a position to make some plays. But I've got this offensive line, and, you know, what am I going to do with that? And that therein lies, you know, kind of the crux of the problem, because it's easier, as crazy as it sounds, if you've got a tackle that needs help, you can chip or stick tight ends out there or do something to give him a little bit of help. It's hard to help a guard, you know, it's especially if he's overmatched physically by somebody just better than he is, you know, because you're constantly sliding the line one way or another, or, you know, the center is only helping on one side. And the problem, like when you slide the line, that may help the guard out and all of that may be good. But now you've got a running back or a tight end out there trying to block some gazelle pass rusher that, you know, may also get the quarterback killed. So, you know, I would have to think his number one issue is trying to put together an offensive line that can protect long enough to get rid of the ball and that can help you in the run game. And therein kind of lies the crux.
Floyd, as a GM in the offseason, you bolster your roster in one of two ways. You do it through free agency, and you do it through the draft. And we know we have to be patient with draft picks 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it might be, to see what they ultimately pan out to be, and then we evaluate and grade how a draft class was. But what about free agency? Because Roger Saffold seems like a liability in the run game. Cameron Wake is getting up there in years, although week one he certainly made an impact. Adam Humphries has kind of been MIA basically because of down and distance. When do you begin to assess a free agency class?
You know, I look at those guys, and Humphries was much more of a factor this week. I think primarily because of, you know, how they play, and it allowed him to get in a position where he could make some plays, and I can see him being okay. I'm not worried about him, and I'm really not worried about Saffold. I think when we get everybody in line there and everybody's situated, we're going to find that he's going to be okay. You know, the truth is, it's those guys should step right in and help you, but, you know, like with Wake, I think in Wake and Humphries, the situations are similar. Down and distance and opportunities are key. I think Wake only played like 10 or 15 snaps this week. That's because primarily, you know, you're behind, you're trying to catch up. And, you know, if you're doing that, then, you know, they're playing the pass, the defense is playing the pass, but you don't get the opportunity to get the pass rusher in there. because the pass rushers, you know, they're playing the run, and we all know that he's, I won't call him a liability versus a run, but you're almost wasting him if you put him in there on a run down. So, you know, you've got to get ahead or at least have a tight game so that when you get in a passing situation, he can go in there and do something for you.
Now, Floyd, this might be a question, and I'm sure you can answer it. And I want to, because I'm pretty sure our listeners would love to know the answer to this. Is there a proper way to chip? Because I've seen several times where Lewis has made the job tougher for the tackle. There's been several times where he's gotten away and knocked the tackle or the guard off, and lo and behold, he's in Marcus's face. Is there a proper way to chip a defensive end?
You know, there is, and I think it depends on the tackle. Uh-huh. You know, if you're a tackle and you're really worried about the speed rush, you're just worried about flat speed, then he needs to stay outside, and he doesn't need to crush him. He just needs to slow him. You know, if you're a tackle that is going to get overpowered, then I think the running back has got to run up there and he's got to really, you know, put a shoulder into him. I mean, he's got to do something to affect the power that guy has. But the absolute most important thing in all of this is that the tackle understands where the guy's going to be. You know, you see too many times where a tackle is feeling pressure outside and he makes a move to the outside where the chip guy is. And all of a sudden, the defensive end now is going inside. And so the chip guy, like you said, hits the tackle and may actually knock him off. So, you know, the whole thing is I think, understanding who you're chipping for.
Oh, no. Oh. Floyd just vanished.
No.
Oh, no.
Did Jared cut it off?
Right in the middle of a great explanation about a football move. And
are you there?
There he is.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Jared was listening. He was like, nope, that answer's too good. Let me cut it off.
Yeah, we blame Stephen.
Floyd, good stuff. We appreciate the time. We'll be listening today at 2.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Floyd Reese joining us. I think Stillman might have hijacked the connection.
Yeah, it's Stillman. Like, no, we need to use that for our show, Floyd. Slow it down. But because I you guys know I like watching the All-22. And several times, the running back has made it worse for the tackle or guard. And has instead of it being an advantage, it becomes a disadvantage. Because like Floyd said, either he lines up, he goes to block him in the wrong area, the tackle don't know where he's at, he knocks the tackle off, which then knocks the guard off, and everything becomes a cluster.
And you're taking a receiver out of the route.
Exactly. And right. It becomes a cluster because you don't block it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll say this. I guess that's better than if the offensive lineman doesn't know how to chip, because Jameel Douglas couldn't chip to save his life.
Like, he needs some chips.
Like, he would just, like, he would, like, throw a chicken wing at somebody and then, like, move on to the next level. And then Calais Campbell will get a sack. And you'd be like, wait a second, Jameel, you need to actually chip the defensive lineman.
But you know how to chip, don't you?
Yeah. Give me some dips, some guacamole. I'm down.
I thought you were going to go
poker. On the golf course.
I was thinking about poker.
Oh, my chipping game is great on the golf course.
You have excellent short game.
Short game's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it's the distance off the tee that, you know, kills me. So is the chipping going to make the D-Mace dissection of the All-22 this week?
Ooh, that could be good.
Tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock.
Hey, listen.
That could be good.
To be determined.
Okay. Okay. Right. Morning drive. We're back after this. Stay there. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, good stuff out of Floyd Reese. We will continue our Titans conversation in just a couple of minutes, but kind of an interesting debate just broke out here during the commercial, because we don't just debate sports on this show. We debate life and entertainment. And
last commercial break, we argued about Bill Self.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Kansas basketball coach.
And it has nothing to do with our show
nothing,
at all.
Zero.
D-May says, Bill Self's underachieving. And then Braden says, I think your boy Izzo has only got one as well, right?
That's not exactly how it went down. But I think if you win one national championship, you've done pretty well. 14 conference titles in a row, 3 Final Fours. He took, by the way, Tulsa and Illinois to the Elite Eight. You know how hard it is to take Tulsa and Illinois to the Elite Eight? And
well, then Illinois has historically had a good team, good program.
They had one good year in 05.
Yeah, they had the national Williams championship team. Year.
Yeah, they lost.
Yeah, they lost in the national championship. You're right. But no, we were discussing.
Yes.
And this might be a poll question, people.
We were
discussing hummus and fresh, authentic pita bread.
Yeah, like real, warm, the real stuff.
Out of the oven, straight out of the oven, or chips and queso, or chips and salsa.
If you're giving me a salsa and a queso where I can dip into both of them and I can get that chip covered in salsa and queso, that's hard to beat. But the fresh pita right out of like a brick fire oven with like the little char on it. Yeah, oh, my God.
See, if you give me the guacamole, I would put that over queso.
Ooh,
and salsa.
Really?
I think guacamole is a bigger threat to the existence of hummus
uh-huh.
than queso and salsa.
You think
why,
so?
Why do you think that?
It's well, just great.
Well, salsa, but salsa's number one right now as far as power rankings go. Not in our opinions,
uh-huh.
but as far as the mass appeal, there's far more salsa is being sold and consumed in
of
this
course.
Country than everything
I'm a
else.
Hummus guy, though. You give so me am some I. hummus. Hummus is at the top of the list. Salsa, hot salsa.
Here's what we're going to do.
Then second.
I'm going to do some market research on this because I'm going to talk to my 3-year-old.
Uh-huh.
Because my 3-year-old is obsessed with queso and hummus, both equally. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to the house after work today and I'll get some audio. And we'll see which one
gets some more.
I'll see which one she likes.
I think kids believe that salsa, for some reason, is more fun. Salsa is more fun
she will
for
not
some
eat,
reason.
She, won't eat, she loves hummus.
Like, because you dip, and then it gets messy, and it's red. And I just think salsa is fun to them.
It's for kids.
Salsa is fun.
It's like ketchup and ranch.
Oh, stop it. Salsa, chips and salsa is like, it's like the most, that's like the most, chips and salsa has made it through every dietary fad.
But as you graduate, you know, you go to guacamole and queso and you elevate your palate.
Queso is not an elevation of the, if you go to a Mexican restaurant and you're ordering queso, I don't think you're elevating the palate. No, I think it's like just a vat of sauce in the back that just gets stirred up a few times every couple minutes. My 3-year-old will have a tough time with this. Now, yesterday we videotaped her eating a salad, and she hates veggies. She's like, I don't want veggies, guys. Mm-hmm. And so I gave her a salad. It was chicken, avocado, and spinach. And as she's like shoveling it into her mouth, we started videotaping her. And she's like, what are you eating there, Marin? And she's like, salad. With avocado and chicken, and we're like, so no veggies, right? And she's like, no veggies. I don't like veggies. And I'm like, but just spinach. And she goes, yeah, just salad. And I'm like, okay, baby. You got it. Whatever you say.
Good job. Those are not veggies. No.
I don't like veggies, guys, but I love my salad.
Those are not veggies.
And we look at you, we're like, yes, we're smarter than a 3-year-old. Yes.
All right, Hollywood, here's what we got to do. Add 1025 underscore MD.
Already did it.
Okay. Do you have
that's why he's the best producer. That's
now, better
now
combo.
I was going to say, how many options here?
Well, it's just two options. We're only discussing.
Like we added, it sounded like we should have added salsa and guac, though, to the mix.
But I think you put chips and queso in the same category as salsa. Because usually,
I think you, Twitter gives you four options, right?
Oh, man. I'm trying to think.
I think
do
we
you
need
separate
I think we
chips
need to
and
see
salsa. Because
salsa, queso, hummus. Those
no,
four.
No, because when you do, when Rank you're at a restaurant, you say, can I have chips and salsa, chips and queso.
You got to order the queso separately, though.
Yeah, you're right. You got to pay for that separately.
And
so
if you
it
want
is
guac, you
got to
order
thing.
That separate, too.
Yeah,
man, it's like politics. I gave you two options. You can have a write-in, whatever. Just
yeah, you can have a write-in.
You can have a write-in.
Well, avocados aren't cheap.
Just change the tweet.
Yeah, avocados are
nice. And by the way, have you ever tried to make your own guacamole out of avocados?
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
not that hard.
Skinning them and cutting them and pitting them and peeling them.
My mom used to do that.
Dude, I'll teach you the techniques. I literally have to do that every day.
But to make
every
a big
day.
Tub like to last more than one meal, probably takes you about a half hour to do it.
Oh, easy, yeah.
Yeah.
I just have to do this. There's an art form. You cut the avocado in half, and then you slice it down the middle. Then you scoop it out. Then you pull out the pit. Like I just said,
has to be an easier way.
My two daughters eat avocado like crazy, and it takes me all of 10 seconds to get an avocado out of that damn peel. Because that's when the baby is screaming and she wants some avocado, you better be fast with the knife.
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know,
isn't there a machine where I can kind of do all that for you?
It's not
if there
hard.
Is, I'll buy it.
Yeah, me too.
It's only hard because you have to the making guacamole. You have to make so many of them. Like you have to do seven, eight avocados, and then it only lasts for like 2 or 3 days because the avocado goes bad. So you gotta It's like you're doing all this work, but you're like, oh, I got to eat it all in the next 2 days. Guac is delicious. I might go guac over salsa.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
No, I'm going hummus over guac. I'm not a guac person unless it's money.
It's very odd that you're not a guac fan. Of somebody who likes all the healthy
foods. Wait, unless it's money? What does that mean?
It's just... Yeah, he's just...
I like how you turn to me. He's like, they just don't understand.
Yeah. No, hey, don't put me in there. I knew what he was talking about.
I didn't say you. Yeah. Nick just showed his whiteness. All right.
Don't
guac
me
is
in
money.
There.
We consider money. Green.
I never
guac.
Heard that
I mean,
one.
Yeah, anything.
No.
Do you mean like cheddar?
Yeah, you know.
I've heard
that?
Cheddar.
I'm carrying cheddar.
Cheddar.
Nick.
Nick.
Not as cash, no.
It's cheddar.
It's not cheddar.
Okay.
Cheddar is cheese. Right. It's cheddar.
You got to start adding A's to these things.
Can you use any dairy product to describe money? Like, oh, man, I'm walking around with lots of sour cream in my pocket. Like, can you do that?
Not really. That sounds too long. No? Sour cream too long.
Okay. Have I temporarily lost my honorary brother card?
Yes.
Just until we go to break.
Because that's old. Guac is old. That's like passe. You should have known that when you were in Philly.
If I knew that, then you definitely lost your card.
All right.
Like you're the same guy.
I'll take it. I'll deal with it.
You're the same guy.
Sorry, you can earn your way back onto the team.
You're the same guy that said two-pack, huh?
Two-P-A-C.
Two-P-A-C.
Now, my dad used to smoke two packs a day, but it was two-P-A-C.
Two-P-A-C, absolutely.
Exactly right.
Oh, man. You can earn your way back onto the team, though. We'll have tryouts.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
When we come back, we've had about 40. Can't even give a proper tease. I'm so ashamed of myself. We're going to talk Titans. That's all you need to know. Stay there.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.